Probably one of the most misunderstood parts of human existence is the fact that too many people think that time and chance or luck or just accident helps people to achieve and to finally attain success in their lives. Now, before we start, we want to give you a definition of what generally is looked upon as success, so that you could apply it in your own life as you see fit. Basically, success is nothing more than achieving personal goals. And if a person's goal is to basically have an unruffled life, where basically day-to-day goes along without too many disturbances, and they attain that goal, then they are considered successful. If another person wants to become the President of the United States, as we see some are vigorously trying right at the present time, and they attain it, they're successful. To someone else, if they'd like to be a successful mother or a housewife, or if someone would like to have a small retail business, or else someone else would just like to be successful at doing nothing. In either case, if you achieve it, you have been successful. So what we want to deal with today is to realize and understand that our personal goals or achieving success does not happen by accident. Even though we live in a very complex society, even though we live in a world that basically many factors we cannot control, yet it works by laws. And there are laws that apply toward achieving our goals. And what we want to do in this first session this morning is actually find out what some of these laws are. And we're only going to have time in the hour and 15 minutes that I have to actually go through five or six or seven basic laws. There are actually dozens, but I tried to pick the ones that I thought would be the most appropriate and those that you could use in your practical everyday life. Let's take the example of a marriage that just begins. A new man and woman come together as a husband and wife, and maybe a week or two later, all of a sudden, their marriage is in jeopardy, and they begin to doubt, they begin to wonder about their marital relationship, and they can't seem to understand why it isn't the flowery, romantic, beautiful vision that they had before they got married. And they figure, well, I guess we just picked the wrong mates. And yet, really what has happened is they didn't realize the laws that were actually functioning from the day that they were married to produce a rather negative situation within just two short weeks. Another example that usually hits home, and I think this is a very costly one from a financial standpoint, whether you realize it or not, but 90% of all people who start in business 10 years later no longer are in business. So it means only about 10% of all people or corporations or institutions who start out with a business concept 10 years later are still in business. That's a high failure rate. And millions of dollars are lost and people lose and they wonder why. And let me just give you one example. Let's say that you come up with an idea. Let's say you're in an area where there's a pretty high demand for housing. And you come up with a type of house to build, and you're a contractor. You've basically built a few homes and sold them, and this is the business you're in. And you all of a sudden come up with a real unique type of home. It's about 30% under the market cost than the normal home of that type. Also, you had the type of area that basically, in your mind, you think people would be just be coming by the dozens to try to purchase the home. You even go out and get the financing from the bank so that you can have the mortgage money as well as the cash flow money to build the houses. And you're really enthused. And far as you're concerned, it's a sure thing. And then you start, and 6 months later, you're bankrupt. And you right away start to look around at what you should blame. This tendency, this approach to life, generally causes much sorrow and much trepidation for a lot of people. And yet, what has actually been taking place, some very significant laws that function in each and every one of our lives. And so what we want to do is go through the stages with your own particular life. Now, all of you have a copy of the Achievement Worksheet. So as we go through these laws, what I'd like you to do is actually write down your own problem that you're working on right now, whatever it is. Or maybe a problem from the past that still is unresolved. Or maybe a problem that looks like it's going to happen in the future. or a problem that you're sitting with right now. A problem is nothing more than an obstacle that's hindering you from achieving your success or your personal goal. That's all a problem is. That's what you worry about. All right, now, under number one there, I found it's best when I go through these laws, if you work out with your own personal problem, then you'll get to learn how to use the material. It states problem and then state, or write it down. So what I'd like you to do while I'm talking here, before I actually get into some of the laws, is just write down a problem that's on your mind. It might be no more a problem than you have difficulty in getting along with your teenagers. Or the problem might be something along the line that there's a foreman at work. Any type of problem. We want to learn how we can master and achieve our goals. Because if we could learn that, we can start to understand why we do have problems and why we don't find solutions. So just write down your problem. And as we go through this, I'm going to give you many different types of examples. And as I do, but you relate it to yourself. And generally, the more that we discuss it, the more awareness it'll be on how you use these laws. They work. They always work. It isn't something that maybe it will. It always works this way. Now, the reason I would like you to write the problem down, because I feel this. You've come to a seminar, and you've paid funds. And I've been to dozens of seminars. And I have found this out that generally to be true. Even if the information is of value, because of the very laws that we're going to talk about, 99% of the people never do anything with it. So you really spend your funds, and they're really not profiting you. So if I make you work out a problem, then what it is a motivator to see that you use the information. Now, you're going to get a lot of information in 8 hours today. And whether it be law or whether it be finance or with achieving goals, what good is it unless you make it part of your life? I think one of the most disappointing things that happened to me is when we were putting this seminar on in Chicago and had a relative who attended there. And he was all excited, and afterward he was just all enthused about what he learned. And he said, boy, I'm going to use this in my business. He said, this explains now why a lot of times I'm always running into crises, see? And I've got problems that come up. Well, I saw him about a year later, and he said, say, would you mind counseling with me about my business? Because I had actually years ago brought him into that business and trained him, and he became very successful. And so we start talking about it, and the more he started to talk about it, I said, didn't you attend the Achieving Success seminar? And he said, yes. I said, don't you realize it's very obvious what your problems are is because you're not using the things you learned. I said, do you remember the law of, and which we'll cover? And he said, yeah, I do. And I said, why didn't you apply it? See, if you applied it, You wouldn't have to even talk to me about it. You wouldn't have even had the problem today. And he said, yeah, you know, I guess that's true. All right, now, so that's made me very cognizant and aware that I want to help the people who take advantage of our seminars to really make it part of your lives. These laws that I'm going to cover with you this morning, I don't have to look at them from time to time. They are in my mind. And there's when I talk with people. When I organize or I plan something or I want to do something, if it doesn't turn out the way I wanted, bingo, it automatically pops in my mind and I could spot just why it didn't so I can make the corrections to see that it doesn't happen again. See? So until this becomes part of your method of life, and that's what I want to get across, the material really won't help you too much. See? But if it becomes part of you and you make it a part of your life, it becomes part of the way you think, your mentality, then it will start to help you to achieve in your life. Now, basically, there are three overall areas in any problem that you work with that before you actually implement it or you start to do it that you have to consider. The first major section is generally referred to as planning. Now, planning is just a major heading, and we're just going to cover about three laws under planning. Then the second major section, as you see on your sheet, is avoiding obstacles. In other words, it's tell you how to watch out for what you can expect to happen that you don't want to happen, that you don't know will happen, but you better prepare for it. Okay? And then the last section is activation are actually able to put it into force so that you can achieve your goal. So those are the three major areas that we're going to cover. Now, I want to tell you something first about how psychologically how human beings work. Human beings generally, and this is not only an individual, but since governments, local governments, federal governments, nations, internationally, are nothing more than a composite of people, you will see that this is true whether you're looking at a corporation like General Motors or if you're looking at entire complex of European nations or if you're looking at your own life in your own house. This happens to be true. Most people, psychologically, generally do not take steps necessary to correct the problem until it becomes a crisis. And there's much talk in management, in the field of management, about preventative management instead of management by crises. However, the majority of human beings function by crises. And here's the simple reason why. Is because we are creatures of habit. And whenever we are going to try to achieve something different than we've done before, any goal, it requires the changing of habits, which is contrary to the way humans psychologically function. So therefore, the only thing that kicks us off of the plateau in which we are is a crisis. We get worried, we get frustrated, full of anxiety, we get depressed, all the negative aspects, and then we start to do something. You start to move. Okay, so in planning, if you want to be the few, and maybe I'd like to tell you this, and this is a bit of information, you'll say, yes, I know that, but I'm going to tell you so you realize it in everything you do. Nearly anything that is done by people, since what I just told you about how people function, it means most people function incompetently. This is just a truism. Most nations function incompetently. Now, let me explain what I mean by competence and incompetence. Probably many of you are familiar with the book, The Peter Principle, that everyone rises through the level of incompetence. All we really mean by incompetence is that somebody else is more competent than you. Because everyone who is alive and living can function and has a degree of competence. It just depends how high. How professional, how expert, see, how good. That's the key. In other words, I want to show you the basic premise psychologically. Since all human beings generally function on the basis that they don't want to change habit and it requires a change of habit to achieve a new goal, most will be incompetent. You get the point? Okay, very important to understand that. It doesn't mean that these people are bad people. Or it doesn't mean that they don't want to succeed. It's just that they don't understand how people function. Now, this is true in anything. So if we want to be the exception, the few, we've got to be willing to implement laws that the majority will not do. And that's why you see a world today that's in chaos. And that's why you see civilizations come and civilizations fall. That's why you see nations can't work together, because of the very fact that it's done by crisis management. So if you accept that in the beginning, and if you walk out after 8 hours of instruction today, you're ahead of the game. You know why? Because you fall into what? What do you fall in if you walk out after 8 hours and actually make it a part of you? You're changing. See? And you're going to be the small percentage instead of the majority. That's exactly what you'll be. And it could really change your life. And that's our purpose in the foundation, is to help people to find purpose in their lives, to help them to change their lives and succeed in them. All right, so under planning, let's start. And let's take a few examples. Now, you've got your problem, so keep your problem in mind and relate it to the laws that I'll actually bring out in the examples that I give you. All right? All right, A, capital A, under planning. Here is the first law. It's a truism. It always works. And it's simply this. And the reason I didn't complete each sentence there is I want you to write it out. All right? Here's the law. If a required need is not filled, a crisis will develop. If a required need is not filled, a crisis will develop. Let me say that again. If a required need is not filled, a crisis will develop. All right, now let me go back to the example that I gave you and see how it works. Now notice, it doesn't say, if a need is not filled, a crisis will develop. It states, if a required need is not filled, a crisis will develop. And there is a difference between these two statements. So the need must become required before it becomes a crisis. See? And so therefore, since most people do not change or will not do what they should do until a crisis happens, what's the problem? It's because they didn't recognize what? A required need. See, the failure to recognize a required need is the catalyst that produces the crisis. And it's a pity that most people only move once the crisis happens. Now, some people, when a crisis occurs, actually don't do anything. They get worse because they get so negative about the crisis that they can't dig out of the hole. All right, now let me go back to the example that I initially gave you in the beginning of the contractor who bought this prestigious land plot. And not only did he buy the land plot, but he had this unique home that was 30% under the market value. Remember? And he was all excited and felt he had a real winner here. A real winner. He said, boy, we're going to make millions. We're 30% under the market. Look at this house. It's beautiful. It's in this prestigious area. And all of a sudden, 60 to 90 days later or 6 months later, he goes bankrupt and he can't understand it. Simply because of this first law. What he thought was that if you fill the needs of people, you could succeed. What he didn't consider was it a required need? Now, let me tell you what a required need is. The difference between a required need, and this is how human beings work, and a need is a need is something that should be. But a required need is not only something that should be, but it's something people want. Big difference. And I have consulted with more people who have gone into business and failed and tried to warn them about it because they get so motivated and so excited about their product or their service. And they say, everybody needs this. See, everybody needs a house 30% under value in this prestigious area with this beautiful design. But the question is, do they want it? And if they don't want it, see, you're going to be sitting there and you're not going to sell the houses. All right, now it's the same thing in the marriage. Let's take a look in the marriage. Let's say this young couple gets married. And they both, from the viewpoint, the wife has her concept in her mind, I'm going to do this as a wife. I'm going to cook well. I'm going to take care of the house, keep it clean. I'm going to be sweet to my husband. It all sounds good, doesn't it? See? And those all, in the woman's mind, might seem very clearly to be needs to have a successful marriage. If I fill those needs for my husband, where I'm a good cook, I'm a good housekeeper, you know, and I'm sweet to him, well, I know we're going to ride forever off into wander blue land with my knight in shining armor, and forever and ever everything's going to be beautiful. And it doesn't turn out that way. Why not? She might think he wants a good cook, see, and one that will keep the house and be sweet. And maybe what he wants is a woman who will go out and work. See? See, that's the difference. In other words, it's obvious it's a need. It's true. And for a good marriage, the woman should be a good cook unless they have arrangement ahead of time that he's a good cook, you know. All right, it doesn't matter. But the point is this, in her mind, she sees it as something, if I just do this, it can't fail. The only trouble, it's not what he wants. See? And because his required need wasn't filled, a crisis develops. So clear. All right, years ago, I remember the person who founded State Farm Insurance Company, a man by the name of G.J. Mahurl. He was a German farmer in Illinois, and he was at 45. His wife got a severe case of arthritis, very bad, and they had to get out of the farming because at that time the wives, you know, were as much involved as the husband was with these difficult chores. He was relatively successful as a farmer. So he got the idea that since at that time all automobile insurance rates were charged exactly the same whether you lived in a metropolitan area or on a farm. And he thought that was inequitous. And so what he devised was the idea that there should be different rates for rural driving than for metropolitan driving. Now we accept that today with no trouble. That was his idea. And what he did, he founded State Farm Insurance Company. But with the concept, and he first started work with the farm bureaus. And the concept was very simple. He would exclude insuring anyone in the metropolitan area and just insure people on the farm. And only in the state of Illinois. So the name was State Farm. That's exactly how the name came about. See? Then what he did, since he didn't have the resources to test if it was a required need. It was a great idea, wasn't it? See? He knew everybody needed it who was on the farm, but what he didn't know was, did they want it? So what he virtually did, he started to call on farmers for a full year, walking, by himself, and actually sold 1,300 automobile clients in the first year. Then he knew that he had a broad enough base of people who were interested to expand it. All right, you see how you work with it? Now, the next step that happens in planning. If you really found out that, okay, here is a goal I'm going for, here's the needs that I'm filling, see, and now I found out what the required needs are, and these I better fill, otherwise I'll get a crisis. I'll fail at my goal. Now the next step is once you start to fill a need, once you actually start to have it take effect and you're succeeding and you're accomplishing, life must go on, correct? I mean, whatever you're doing has to continue. And usually what happens in life is it's not only that you got a good start, but you've got to take care of what's going to continue to happen. So what I'm saying is you always run into future problems. Now let me explain something. This example, I have a relative who for years, right now I think he's probably in his middle or latter 50s, and for years has always been, every time I would visit, he'd turn on the TV, he was watching the news or whatever, and someone really became successful, whatever, he says, there's another one of those ones who are lucky. He said, someday my ship's going to come in. He's still waiting for a ship. He says, every time I try something, it's life is against me. He said, every time I try it, it always, I get started and I get rolling and then wham, I get hit with a problem. That's because he didn't know the second law of planning, which I'm going to tell you right now in B. B. B is very simply this. Inherent in every solution are its future problems. Inherent in every solution are its future problems. Okay, once more. Inherent in every solution are its future problems. In other words, what I'm saying, the minute that you have solved the problem, you have already created what? Another problem. Now let me give you an example, and let's take a simple thing like marriage again, because everyone equates with it. Alright, now let's say that you're single, and you're a young woman who's 26 or 27. And of course, because of tradition in our society, for some reason, women when they hit that age seem to think that they're old maids. And they've barely become adults. All right? But nevertheless, that's how our society is. All right. Now, so she's single and she's a little frustrated and she's a little filled with anxiety. And what she wants is to solve what? A marriage problem. Right? All right. So what she does, finally she meets a young man. All right? Now, in the beginning, she had a problem, and the solving of the problem required getting married. All right? That's solving the problem. So she gets married, and lo and behold, in 2-3 months, she's find out she has a bigger problem than she had before the one that she wanted to marry. Isn't that interesting? Okay. This happens with everything. with everything. She already, when she decided she was going to change her pattern of habit of living to with a mate, had already created those problems. Because remember what I told you in the beginning? People only change under a new situation, under crisis. So therefore, that every time you come up with a solution to a problem, you already, because it's going to require new changes, in which require changing habits again, it means you've created more problems. That's just what you've done. Now that's exactly what the trouble is with this relative of mine. Every time, I remember he was quite mechanically inclined. And he'd want to go into garage business. Gets in the garage business, starts building, getting customers, and all of a sudden he runs into problems. And he goes bankrupt, and then he complains about it. All right, now what would be the wise thing to do, that once that you started to find you've got a required need that you're filling, so it means you're succeeding, right? So you've used law number one in your planning. Now you already are succeeding, and you already are advancing towards your goal. What should you do after that in light of the second law? Okay, let's say you are filling required needs. But anytime you do something, there are always other things that come along, right? So don't you really have to see what, before they happen, since inherent in whatever your solution was, already your future problems are coming, wouldn't it be wise to already think of what are all the things that could happen by my solution? Now let me give you an example. Again, a man and woman gets married. All right? And the woman and the man say, hey, we'd like a family. And it's a required need. The wife feels deeply she wants to be a mother. The man feels deeply he wants to be a father. They want children. That's a goal they want to achieve. All right? So then they set out and they get a child. All right? What has happened? They've got problems. And let's just look at it from an economic viewpoint. Let's just look at it from an economic viewpoint. So where we have planning, preventative management instead of crisis management. All right, let's say the woman says and the man says, I've always wanted a big family. See, because I was the only child, you know, or whatever, and I've always wanted a big family. That's the required need. Okay, that's what they want. And they start having four or five children. And they're saying, we've really got the solution to our problem. We wanted a big family and we've got it. The only thing they created was an economic crisis. See, because they did not think ahead in reference to their solution, that, wait a minute, once we add another mouth, we multiply all the cost factors for living. Now when we multiply six children, see, we multiply it six times. So it means we need this much bigger of a home. We need so much more clothing. So much more has to go into food. See, we have to plan for education, all right? All right, now let me give you an example of a motel, all right? This applies to a motel. See? And I could spot a motel and know 5 years before it goes bankrupt, it's going to go bankrupt by the second law. Now let me show you a very simple thing, and I've seen only very few motels ever realize this. Look, whenever you build anything physical, whether a house, a car, sew clothes, what's going to happen to it? It's going to what?
Deteriorate.
So therefore, if your solution, see, to a problem for a residency is saying, hey, this would be a good business right close to downtown, the Astrodome, and if we build a beautiful motel, we'll be packed. What were we talking about that happens to all physical things? They deteriorate. So since this is a known fact, when I had the solution of building the motel in a very ideal location for a real demand of a required need, and it shows it's prospering, if I don't consider the problem that I have already produced the day I built it, which is deterioration, and start to what? That fill that required need. See, that first law comes right back in. If I don't set aside a contingency reserve in my cost factors, that every time someone pays a motel bill, 1% of one whatever goes aside into a contingency reserve to keep what up? To keep it up. You see how simple? Now, this is what you have to do. That's planning, isn't it? That's planning. I've got a solution to my problem. All right, now once I do that solution, what am I going to produce in problems? Okay, that's what you have to consider. Then you say, what are the solutions to those problems? And then once I get the solution to those problems, then I say, what kind of problems will those solutions produce? See? Then I have to ask myself this question. Once I have gone far enough in my planning of seeing all the time what problems the solutions produce, I have to ask myself, do I want to go through those problems? And if I do not want to go through those problems, what does it tell me about the direction I'm going? Don't go. Now, if it turns out, I say, I'm willing to handle those problems that I see inherent in every one of my solutions, then I go and my eyes are wide open. My eyes are wide open. All right, now that leads us to the third law. All right, the third law in planning. And this one is the one that really damages more people in their planning than anything else in reference to their problems. And that's simply this. See, all logic is not true, but truth can be logical. All logic is not true, but truth can be logical. Once again, all logic is not true, but truth can be logical. Now, let me tell you this. Whenever you see a need, we're going back to the first law, and you get excited about it. Let's say even you find out it's a required need, all right? At least you think it's a required need because it makes logical sense. Everybody should want this STP, all right, which is what you did. And it probably was very true, see, from a logic standpoint, see? And you even might have gone ahead and said, well, look, the way we'll market this and sell this, here's the solution to our problem of marketing it. And then I go ahead and implement, you know, the solution to the problem marketing. And then I run into all kinds of problems because the required need wasn't really a required need that seemed very logical to me. So the point was your thought of the business you wanted to go into was very logical, but what? Yeah, but so what did that mean about your logical reasoning process? Wasn't true. All right, so whenever you're in the planning stages of any achievement toward a goal, you've got to be sure your logic is factual. You've got to be sure your logic is factual. It's like this. Let me give you an example again with marriage. Let's say that this girl really likes this guy, and she knows that no one's perfect. And he's not perfect either. He's a drunk. Okay? But she really wants to marry him. They really are good companions when they're together, when he's sober. See? They appeal to each other from a physical attraction standpoint. And she in her mind says, now look, I am so committed to him and I love him so much. I am just sure, and I've talked with him about it, and he really wants me to help him. He really does, to stop being a drunk. Now, I'm going to marry him and help him to overcome being an alcoholic. That's very what? But it's logical. It is literally logical, but not true. In other words, it's not factual, even though it made sense in the reasoning process. In other words, to expect out of a relationship that which it doesn't have the ability to perform is foolishness, even though it sounds logical. And this is what we do. See, it's the way you read a book. Every book that's written, I shouldn't say every book because that's not true even though it sounds logical. See, but most books that are written, and that's general enough of a term, all right, most books that are written from a viewpoint that makes sense. And you could take one subject and attack it from 50 different ways and all 50 authors will seem right. Which is, what are you just saying? That all logic is not true. So in reading a book, whether or not it makes sense does not necessarily make it true. It just merely sounds sensible or reasonable or rational, but that does not make it true. See? even though truth can be logical. So what do you have to do in your planning? Once you know you have a required need, you have actually gone ahead and worked out the plans for the solutions and worked out what problems with plans for solutions. Now what are you left with planning? What do you have to prove now with how far you've gone with the first two laws? Is it true? Is it fact? So now you have to go over your whole plan, every step, and virtually see if everything that you have worked out in your plan is really true. Not does it make sense, not is it logical, is it true? See? Like this. Let me give you an idea. Let's say I'm unemployed, and I live in Atlanta, Georgia. I don't know, I'm just making it up. And I tried all I could, I think, in getting employment, and I still can't get employment. So we get together with the family, and we say, honey, we're on welfare. I don't like being on welfare. Hubby, the wife doesn't like it. The children don't like it. We'd like more income so we could live better. What is the solution to that problem? The required need is obvious, right? Everybody in the family not only wants him to be, needs for him to be employed, they want him to be employed. So the required need is there, and they have to fill it. Now, a solution. So many times what they'll do in their solution is simply this. They'll say, we've got to move from this location, I can't get a job. That makes sense, doesn't it? So in Atlanta, he says, let's move to Houston. See, which could be a right solution and maybe not a right solution. And they make the judgment on simply this. Houston is booming. The unemployment rate is down. See, let's take everything we have, put it into the Jeep or into the station wagon, get a U-Haul, and take off for Houston. Now, everything so far sounds very logical. The person gets there, see, and they say, oh, in 3 weeks I should have a job. 2 years later, they're still on welfare. You see, it made real sense. Pick up stakes, can't find a job here, and you move to Houston. See, employment rate is high, unemployment low, diversified industries because of oil and the spinoffs, okay? Booming city and growing. All those factors seem very logical, except one problem, you haven't been able to get a job. In other words, you have not tested your logic whether or not it's true. So what would be the sensible way to approach it? If in light of this law, what would have been the reasonable way instead of the time and chance way? Very simple. You see if the job's available. So it might mean that you go there first, right? And you actually look. And you just don't uproot the whole family, dump it into the U-Haul and take off and say, here we are, Houston. You find out if your logic is true. And then if you get the job, you have it, then you go back and you say, Mom, I've got a job. I'm executive vice president of First National Bank. All right? Now that's, facetious. See? All right, you see how you would use that law? See? You've got to check to see whether or not your logic is true. All right? Now that's what you have to do in planning. You have to use those first three laws. All right? Once you use those three laws, your planning is pretty well ready to go. All right, but the next problem is the next second major area, which is called avoiding obstacles. Okay? Avoiding obstacles. Now, you might have even checked everything, and I'll take this Houston situation. All right, so let's say that you were in Atlanta and you came over here and you got the job. All right? You went back, you got your family, and you moved. And you were working, and the family was settled, you had an apartment or whatever, and you were living, and all of a sudden, 60 days later, you were fired. You're right back where you were in Georgia. And you say, how did this happen? I came here, I had this job, they brought me down here, and look, I am. I'm 2 months here, and I'm fired. They said cut off because of budgetary problems. All right, what is the problem? All right, here is the next law. In avoiding obstacles, all right, of what happens. And this is what you have to think about before you jump into something, whatever goal it is, see. All right. If a loss, this is D, if a loss is sustained, hostility is created. Let me state it again. If a loss is sustained, hostility is created. Once more, third time. If a loss is sustained, hostility is created. All right, now let's go to the example, and we'll carry it through, and then you can relate it to your own problem. All right, the person who moved down here from Atlanta to Houston, he has a job. And he found out 60 days later he was fired. He needs to find out why. Now, what he needed to do in the beginning was not merely find out if his logic was true and to get a job, but then he even had a plan further to the place that he had to find out, what will be my obstacles? In other words, what will I be confronted with that I've got to overcome if I want to keep the job? Now, the way you do that, if you've got to find out and see, who will you cause to lose by you getting the job? What happens is any time by what you do, whether you have no intention to hurt anyone or not, if it causes a loss for someone, you have created an enemy. They don't even have to know you as a person or even your name. And they already don't like you. So if that be the case that you took the job and there was a person now where you were foreman and they didn't get the job, and these were pretty powerful people who could really influence your boss, you better recognize when you come there, you're not only going to have to prove that you're a good foreman, you're going to have to prove that you diplomatically know how to handle the situation with your boss so you don't get fired because of the power influence of the people you caused a loss to underneath you. Right? This is how it works, isn't it? All right, so if you're going to implement a plan, it could be in your marriage. You may think you've got a good idea, see, but you caused a loss to someone in the family, children, husband, wife, or whatever. The minute you did that, you created an enemy right in your own family. And you already have an obstacle, don't you? Okay. Life is complicated, isn't it? I mean, when you go through these laws, it's not that simple. And frankly, here's what I found out. Whenever I plan something, if finally the obstacles and the plan show me it's not worth the goal, I don't do it. I mean, I have to be sure whatever I want to succeed to become or be or whatever personal goal, I have to be sure I'm willing to follow all these laws to get my goal and it's important enough. If it isn't, it's tough. There is nothing in life that requires the achievement of a goal that is easy. And so, in instituting your solution, you better calculate what type of losses are you going to create for people. What we're really learning is how to make a master plan to achieve a goal, aren't we? All right, so if you're going to get into the flow of life, of living, and you're in it, see, you've got to decide whether or not you're going to work with those obstacles. Now, the thing is, once you know who loses, what do you know? You know what the obstacles are going to be, which brings us to the next law, which is the way you handle an enemy. Okay. I remember in this one psychology research book that I was reading, it very simply said, very plain, there's only two ways to handle an enemy. You either love them or destroy them. There's virtually only two ways. That's it. All right, since we don't recommend in the Cultural Foundation destruction, we had to consider laws that actually tell you how to love them. And you don't tell enemies, the way you love enemies is you don't tell them that you love them, see, because that doesn't mean anything to them. The only way that enemies know you love them is when what? When you give them what their required need is. Remember, you go back to the first law. If a required need is not filled, a crisis will develop. And we see in obstacles that if a loss is sustained, then hostility is created. So what you did is you didn't fill a required need of the first law, therefore there was a loss, therefore you have hostility. All right? So the next law, E, is value for value. value for value. Now, obviously, the way, if someone's going to suffer a loss, they suffer a loss because they're losing some kind of value. That's what they're doing. So anytime you're looking for a value, you have to make sure whoever loses the value that they can get a value. Now, it might not be the value that you took. They might get another value and then be filled. And then you're all right. Now, let me give you an example. Let's say I was buying an automobile, and it costs $5,000. I never thought I'd use the figure of $5,000 for a beginning price for a car. But here I am. Now, let's say I went ahead and I bought the car, and I paid $5,000, and I had a value in my mind, and I get it, and in 2 weeks, 25 things are wrong. What did I suffer? A loss. That's exactly right, which creates what for the dealer? An enemy. Okay, you see how these laws work? They work with everything. Now, let's say the dealer, he's got some moxie, as the Jewish people would say, or sense, all right? And he realizes if he really wants his business to keep prospering, and not down the road, it might take 50 years sometime before he pays the penalties, see? But what really should he do if he wants to get rid of the enemy? Courtesy service. If he virtually says, that was my fault for that loss that you sustained, I am sorry, and then virtually make sure that all 22 items are taken care of, what has he done? Value for value, which does what for the obstacle? It gets rid of the obstacle. But the minute that I can get a value for value relationship, even though I receive something, it caused a loss, but because I can replace it with another value, I no longer have an obstacle. So it'll be the same thing on the job. I come from Atlanta, Georgia. I come to Houston. And what happened, I'm now the foreman, but there's some powerful people underneath me who resent that I'm foreman and they're not foreman. And I know they're going to be talking to my boss and trying to undermine me. So now I have to replace that loss with another value. That value might be making them part of my team. Okay? All right. I give them a value. If that value fills the loss, I got rid of the obstacle. If it doesn't, then I get very close to the person and start to find out if I can actually get that person up on a level of a value. See? It's very important I do it because he'll kill me. The only way he can take care of me, because I'm an enemy, he's got to what? He's got to love me or destroy me. And most people go the path of destruction. Because it is easier to destroy than to replace a value. Let's go into the last two laws in activation. All right, let's say that you've gone through the first three. You've gone to the avoiding obstacles, found out who to lose, you replace it with a value, and now you're ready to activate. See, really, at this point, we're just beginning to put it into motion. In other words, if you're really using preventative management, this is the place you're ready to do it. All right. Now, law F, under activation, to activate your plan before you activate it, and the movie this afternoon is going to be on this law. It's professionally done from Hollywood. It's the top consultant on time management in the United States. And it's this law that he's talking about, even though it won't be mentioned. You'll recognize it when you see it, because I'm telling you the law. And it's simply this. F, negative priorities must be filled. Negative priorities must be filled. Let me state that again. Negative priorities must be filled. Now, what do I mean by a negative priority? I didn't say priorities must be filled. I said negative priorities must be filled. Now, let me tell you the difference. You've all heard of the adage of doing first things first, right? It's not good enough. Doing first things first does not help you to achieve. What helps you to achieve is doing negative priorities first. Now, let me tell you what negative priorities are, and I'll give you an example. There was a man by the name of Frank Betker. During the Depression, he worked in a plant, and he wanted to upgrade his income, and the only avenue at that time that he saw was available was the life insurance industry. So people who were still supporting themselves during the Depression seemed to be people in the life insurance industry. I mean, there were a lot of failures, just as there are a lot of failures today. But it was a way to get a job and to try to advance. So he tried it, and he failed. Went broke, had to go back to the plant. He was able to get the job, and he started to restore some of his, you know, finances that he lost. He restored it, went back into the business, and failed again. Obviously, he was a very diligent man. He had a lot of guts, and he had a lot of stick-to-itiveness, didn't he? All right, but he began to question. He said, what am I not doing to achieve success in my goal of succeeding in the life insurance industry? So what he very wisely did, he realized now that all logic is not true. So he had to test his logic. So what he did, he wrote a survey to successful people in the United States, in the field of entertainment, in the field of business, in the field of authorship, painters. I forget, 500 or 1,000 people that he wrote to. He started to get the survey forms back, and the question was simply this. What would you attribute your success to? And they listed all kinds of items. Some said money, some said luck, some said education, some said hard work. You know, they'd list it in order, 5, 6, 7 things. And he found one thing in common with all of them. They might have listed it as 7th or 3rd, some 1st, but they all had it. And you know what it was? The willingness to do the things that you don't like to do that must be done. So a negative priority, and the reason we call it a priority is, it means it has to be done if you're going to succeed. The thing that makes it negative, it means it's something you don't want to do. In other words, it means it's going to require a change of habit, right, of a required need. That's what it's going to do. And so what you virtually have to do is you have to put this, as you'll see this afternoon, of everything you do, and this is what he found in his case. He found out if you're going to succeed in the life insurance business, the one top negative priority is simply this. The willingness to go out every day and spend 2 or 3 hours and literally talk to new people that you didn't know before. In other words, they call it prospecting. But the prospecting had to be with people that he didn't know before. They had to be strangers. In other words, he had to expand his market. It was a negative priority. He didn't want to do it. But he did it. He did it. And you know, he became the top life insurance man in the industry. He had written something like $25 million of life insurance himself in 1 year. Because he understood that when you activate a plan, that there is always a priority that must be done if it's going to succeed, and generally it might be negative that you don't like to do it. And unless you're willing to do law number F, your chances of succeeding are almost zero. And I don't care if it's marriage, I don't care if it's business, I don't care if it's child relationships, I don't care whatever it is. If you're not willing to do F, you won't make it. If you do, you're a lucky peasant, as a business consultant said. All right. G, in activation. G, the next law merely states direct and indirect alternatives. Direct and indirect alternatives. And I'll try to just very quickly tell you the difference. An indirect alternative means that you have chosen a plan or a method of getting to a goal that requires changing people's minds. It requires changing people's minds. A direct alternative means that it is a plan that can help you get to your goal without changing people's minds. It means you can go directly towards your goal without having to get anyone else to think differently. Okay? Now, which of the two do you believe would be the best to choose whenever possible to get to a goal? Direct. And I would venture to say that most of you, in the achievement of your goals, because I know it's a fact that most people choose indirect alternatives. And the minute I learned this law And I started to choose direct alternatives instead of indirect whenever it was possible. My success ratio increased phenomenally. In other words, if there was a marital situation, and I felt frustrated as a wife, and I kept trying to get my husband to understand this, what am I doing? That's an indirect alternative. But if I, as a wife, try to answer that required need, which must be filled, otherwise there's a crisis, and directly started to achieve, without having to change my husband's mind, what did I do? I used a direct alternative, and there'll be more peace in the family, everyone will be happier, and you'll have a more successful family. It's just as ridiculous as a wife who has an alcoholic for a husband, see, or vice versa. And the wife is always trying to do what? Or the husband to the other, to the mate, what? Change him. What's the success ratio? Almost zero. See? So it means I have to set my achievement in a direction that's a direct alternative that doesn't include changing them. Okay? So if you want to activate your plan, figure out which alternatives do I have? How many are direct? See, how many are indirect? Now let's go back to the lady who had the house in the changing market area. The indirect would be trying to change a whole neighborhood, okay? And you know how horrendous that would be. The direct is I sell it and get out. But these are the laws that in achieving a goal, if you want to have laws of achievement, you have to consider every one of these laws because they work, they're real. And if you obey them and follow them, your achievement record will be high.